listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Thanks for downloading episode 5. I'm Rob Daly. This is your new European football podcast, running up all the major stories in the major leagues from Germany, Spain, France, Italy and more. My co-host today is Chris Parrott.
Yep, a big departure at Mönchengladbach, who can't stop losing in Germany. Four sides can't stop winning in Europe's big leagues, though. Dortmund, Bayern, Inter and Barcelona still have 100% records. Marseille's match of Lyon descended into chaos, and there was drama in the Bay of Naples.
We hear from former Barcelona CMO Esteve Calzada on why Raheem Sterling is the most valuable under-21 footballer in the world. Plus, Andy Brassel, the European football journalist, tells us what makes Portugal's O Clásico so special.
This is Football in Europe.
Welcome to this week's show. We're going to get round to the Bundesliga later on in the programme, but we have to start the show, Chris, by mentioning the big story this week, that Lucien Favre on Sunday night resigned as Borussia Mönchengladbach head coach.
He did. Worst start ever to a Bundesliga season for Gladbach, and he's walked away. It was a very polite resignation. The club didn't want him to go. They still publicly were backing him, but he clearly decided enough is enough. Such a shame after a brilliant job he's done there for nearly 5 years.
Yeah, finished third last season and got them back into the Champions League, last in it in its form of the European Cup. The other major story, the Velodrome on Sunday night, Chris, utter chaos as Mathieu Valbuena returned to Marseille with Lyon, and the game had to be suspended at one point. What happened on the night?
Well, pretty much everything. A very good game of football, actually, but farcical scenes. It was delayed for 20 minutes whilst they missiles were played. The referee took the players off the pitch. The Marseille fans hung an effigy of Valbuena. As you mentioned, first time back, former Marseille player, went to Dynamo Moscow, now back in France with Lyon. And he was pretty much assaulted for 90 minutes. It was like when you're playing FIFA and you've given up.
You're just hacking away.
There was some terrible, like really bad challenges.
Really bad, yeah.
It was pretty much like a game of rugby with the World Cup kicking off. Not good to see.
Yeah, it did finish 1-1 in the end, and we'll get to French football and look at that later on in depth. Chris, last week, after I shamelessly asked for people to leave reviews, they have done on iTunes, so if you can do that for us, that's really nice. And don't forget to follow our Audio Boom account as well. Barry says, a genuinely entertaining podcast, 5 stars. Thank you very much, Barry.
Is it true that's your friend?
No comment. And the other one, yeah, but Barry does like the show.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
So.
Yeah. Cheers, Baz.
Don't demean that one. And don't demean this one either, from Jack. 5 stars, the title, Epitome of Excellence.
That is really nice. It does, you'll call me a cynic, it does, of course, depend on your definition of excellence, but that is very
what?
Nice.
No, excellence has a definite meaning.
Excellent show.
Yeah, excellent show. Jack, thank you very much for the review. Okay, let's get on with things.
This is Football in Europe, Serie A Roundup.
Time to look at Italian football. We'll start with a big game on Sunday night. Napoli 5, Lazio 0. Chris, what happened here?
Well, it's the first win of the season for Napoli, domestically anyway, in style. Lorenzo Insigne was absolutely brilliant. He scored. Gonzalo Higuain got 2 goals as well. Interesting, came off the back of Diego Maradona, who came out very publicly. Well, he's always very public with his criticisms, but said that Maurizio Sarri, the new man who was appointed in the summer, was a mistake. 5-0 is a decent way to put those to bed. They also beat Club Brugge in Europe as well by the same scoreline. Moved from 4-2-3-1 to 4-3-3, and they're scoring goals for fun all of a sudden, Napoli.
Yeah, very strange indeed. But not the strangest thing that's happened in Naples this week.
No, absolutely remarkable. Before the game, the owner, Aurelio Di Laurentiis, was on his yacht in the Bay of Naples.
As you do, yeah.
It caught fire. He had to be rescued. That's not the most bizarre part of the story. It was captured on film and on camera by Fabio Cannavaro.
Right.
Yeah, who tweeted, boat on fire in the Bay of Naples. On his Instagram, he took a video.
Oh, so he didn't know it was De Laurentiis.
He had no idea it was the Napoli, Napoli president.
And he had to be rescued by helicopter, him and his family.
He did, yeah. Fortunately, they're all okay. But, I mean, that is, it could only happen in Naples.
utterly bizarre. Napoli will be very happy with that win as well. Lazio, that's their second heavy defeat in Serie A this season.
Yeah, they've conceded as many goals as Carpi. They have the joint worst defensive record. 10 against, they were thumped by Chievo, remember, earlier on this season. a lot of injuries. No Candreva, no Billier, no Closer, no even Ravel Morrison. Not that he would help defensively, but it's been a tough start to the season for Lazio, given they were, well, they wanted to be in the Champions League, lost in the playoff round, didn't they? And they're currently sitting 10th in the table after that 5-0 defeat.
Considering that Chievo had 7 points in their opening three games, it looked like Inter were in for a tough match at Chievo, despite winning three of their opening three games. But Inter got another win, Chris.
Yeah, it was narrow. 4 wins in a row now for Roberto Mancini there. First time they've started a season with 4 straight wins since 2002, I think, Inter. They've been down in the doldrums, but Mancini's got them going. It was a very tight game, in truth. I think if Chievo had got a point, they would have been more deserved of it. Rolando Marin, after the game, basically said that. And he also said, the Chievo coach, this is, he said that Inter can challenge for the Scudetto. And he said, because the way they beat us, he said it's a good sign they're able to win while struggling like this. So I think he was upset that his side lost the game. But from Inter's point of view, what a start.
Let's move on to Roma. They were held to a 2-2 draw by high-flying Sassuolo, but there was a landmark moment in this one.
Francesco Totti, 300th goal for Roma. Will he ever retire?
But he was offside. I mean, it sort of takes the shine off of it, doesn't it? When it's, I think he was offside anyway.
Yeah, possibly. But it's Totti. just let him
just
have
let
it.
Just let it have it.
Yeah, amazing though from him. And interesting, not such a great day for Juan Aturbe. He was substituted 5 minutes into the second half, which is an odd time to be substituted anyway. You normally have a bit longer than that.
Yeah.
Didn't take to it too
kindly. Well, it means you're not playing well enough, doesn't it?
Well, you clearly, yeah. Took it out on an ice box as he walked off and then promptly stormed straight down the tunnel.
Disappointing for Roma after their good result against Barca, surely, Chris?
Yeah, I think so. And they will be disappointed, particularly when Juve haven't started well. We'll get on to them in a minute. They did get their first win, but any points that you can make up on Juventus now, if you're Roma, is good. And they'll consider that 2 points dropped.
Empoli got a 2-1 win at Udinese on Saturday. Another notable result. Torino up to second after a 2-0 win against Sampdoria. Quagliarella with both goals. He is flying there. Staying with action from Turin clubs. Chris, Juve, how did they get on after their win against Manchester City?
They won again. 2-0 away at Genoa. Own goal. Well, Paul Pogba basically missed an open goal and fired it into the goalkeeper and it went in. And he scored a penalty to complete the scoring. Good win, that first win of the season domestically, remember, for Juventus. But not such good for Alvaro Morata, who got that winner, didn't he, against Manchester City. One of their main men now, with no Tevez up front. Forced off after 20 minutes, according to Massimiliano Allegri. A strange abdominal pain. They're not exactly sure what it is. He'll undergo tests. But hopefully it's not serious from his point of view.
I didn't see the game, but lots being made of Juve switching to 4-3-3 going forward. And apparently they did that the weekend. So I want to try and see that in an upcoming game. Elsewhere, Chris, Milan, Palermo. Decent game, this one.
Yeah, really good game. Some pretty shocking defending from Sinisa Mihailovic's side.
He still doesn't seem quite happy with the way they're playing.
No, but he has a finisher in Carlos Bacca. I mean, already it's very early days, but already those comparisons with Pipo Inzaghi have begun to be talked about. Ooh. Because I know, big boots to fill. But he knows where the goal is, Bacca. His first goal, he just sort of dug it out, found the back of the net, no backlift at all. Sort of a glorified toe poke, but it was very good finish.
That's a good way to put it.
And then the second goal was a header, just a hopeful ball into the penalty area, really. And he knew where the corner was, scored. He did that at Club Bruges. He did that in Spain with Sevilla. And he is an absolute finisher.
So a 3-2 win for Milan against Palermo. Fiorentina picked up a 1-0 win at Carpi. So they're still waiting for their first win. Frosinone are still waiting for their first point. They were beaten away at Bologna. But it's home games. Yeah. That is more of a talking point with Frosinone at the moment, Chris.
It is a brilliant story. They played Roma in their last home game. And tickets were at a premium, so lots of people, there's a big nearby housing block, so they all sit there on the balcony and on the roof, and the police...
That's a bit cricket, isn't it? You get that at cricket, it people is. Sitting on their balcony.
Yeah, and you know, on Twitter, there's some of those old photo, you know, sites that you follow. They've got loads of those sort of pictures, people sitting on scaffolding. Well, it's similar to that.
Also, it's a bit dangerous. They're a bit worried, are they?
Well, yeah, well, the police have told them to stop doing it. But I don't think they can
Good
stop.
Good luck.
Yeah, well, exactly. So I want to watch Roma. I will sit where I want.
So the Italian top flight, here's how that looks at the moment. Inter top with 12 points. Torino have 10 in second. Fiorentina third with 9. Roma fourth on 8.
You're listening to Football in Europe.
Porto against Benfica this weekend. They call it O Clásico. And Andy Brassel, European football journalist and Portuguese football expert, it has to be said, joins us now. Andy, thanks for coming on.
Pleasure.
Okay, mate, so on Sunday night, Porto picked up a 1-0 win against Benfica. We'll get into why this derby is so special, but what happened in the 90 minutes itself?
Porto looked quite flat for a lot of it. Benfica managed a corresponding fixture very, very well under Jorge Jesus last year. They were under pressure for a lot of it, but it was a great away performance, and they won 2-0 in a game that really went a huge way to deciding the title, even though it was in December. And you had the same feeling this time before the game that it would have a huge influence on the title race. And Porto won it just about with a late goal from André, which is very exciting in a wider context in Portugal, because the Clásico in recent years has not had a lot of Portuguese participation. Not only the fact that 9 Portuguese players took part combining the two sides together, but someone who a lot of people hope will be a part of the future of Portugal's national team scored the winner is a really big deal.
Andy, you wrote a really interesting piece for ESPN about the pressure that Julen Lopetegui is under having not won the title last season. And you seem to say this was a big game for him, but on the face of it, they're top. They seem to be doing okay. So what is exactly the issue with Lopetegui, do you think?
Basically, the club have invested a lot of hope and a lot of money in him. He was brought in because of what he'd done really well, winning European championships at under-19 and under-21 level with Spain. And so they were expecting to bring in a new style of football. They've spent heavily on a lot of Spanish players, as well as a lot of players who played in the Spanish league, like Yassin Brahimi, of course, who they got over from Granada, the Algerian midfielder. With that in mind, with creating a brand of football, I suppose in the same way that, say, Bayern Munich have done in that three-stage thing with Van Gaal, Heynckes and now Guardiola. So they have got the best set of players in Portugal, but they had the best set of players in Portugal last season. With the magic of Jorge Jesus, Benfica managed to outwit Lopetegui and Porto and retain their title. Lopetegui's got just this season left on his contract. He has to win this. There's no doubt about that. Been a few little concerns. There's been a sense that Lopetegui hasn't really handled big matches that well tactically. That was the case in both Clásicos against Benfica last season, and of course the return leg against Bayern Munich when they were defending a 3-1 lead from the Dragao and they were absolutely pummeled in the Allianz Arena. Now of course that could happen to anyone against Bayern, but there was a big feeling that Lopetegui tactically got it wrong. People were looking at him again because of, in the week, the late equaliser they conceded to Dynamo Kiev. And if they'd have held on and won that game, it would have been the first time since Lopetegui's been coach that they'd have come from behind to win.
And Andy, why isn't the Lisbon derby, which will be especially interesting this year with Jorge Jesus facing his former club, but why is this the biggest game in Portugal and what makes it so special?
Because of what they see as differing philosophies, differing histories, juxtaposed cities in Lisbon and Porto. But of course, they're far more similar than they'd like to admit. You've had that with Benfica almost copying the Porto model of getting in players, developing them and selling them on at a huge profit, which is something that Jorge Jesus was hugely complicit in. And quite apart from the excellent football he played and the trophies he won, that is why him leaving the Luz this summer is such a big deal. It's historical too, the fact that Benfica really put Portuguese football in the map in the 60s with those European Cup wins. Eusébio and Mário Coluna embodied Portugal and Portuguese football for so many people around the world. And that Porto came back with a very strong business plan, very aggressively under Pinto da Costa, Jorge Nuno Pinto da Costa, their president, who's been in charge for over 30 years now and is a very, very forthright, very, very divisive figure. And they clawed back so much ground on what many Portuguese see as the traditional giants of Portuguese football in Benfica. So there are a lot of reasons, historical reasons, why there's this enmity, but also they're always trying to keep up with each other. So they've got a lot more in common than they think.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
turning our attention to French football, why did what happened happen at the Velodrome with that hanging effigy of Mathieu Valbuena, the former Marseille player, going back there as a Lyon player, and then the game being stopped because missiles were being thrown at him? I mean, there doesn't seem to be that great, great history between Marseille and Lyon, because Lyon in their current incarnation have only really been this team since the 90s. So what is the level of hatred, and why was it so ferocious towards Valbuena on Sunday night?
Valbuena is someone they thought of as very much of their own. He doesn't come from the area. He comes from Bordeaux, sorry. He's a player who gave so much on the pitch. They really loved him. When he went, it was sad to Dynamo Moscow, and he was sad to go as well. He's going to settle back in the area, in fact, when he quits playing in a few years' time. He's having a house built just outside Marseille. But for him, he was saying after the game, he was really sad that people reacted like that. Marseille don't like Lyon for a number of reasons, mainly because they're regarded as nouveau riche, whereas Marseille are thought of as a more traditional giant of French football. And of course, we talked about like putting a nation's football on the map, will of course culminating in the Champions League win in 93. With the Glasman-Valenciennes scandal, in the wake of that, where they were stripped of the title that they won, the Ligue 1 title, and were relegated in 93, some of their players got picked off by Lyon. One of those included Abdi Pelé. I think Valbuena's move, of course, he didn't go directly. It embodies a frustration, as well as the fact that they loved him so much. It embodies a frustration in the fact that he went to Lyon not because he felt that connection with the club like he felt with Marseille, but because they could offer him things that Marseille couldn't. Some more money, although he took a cut from what he was on at Dynamo Moscow. But basically, Champions League football, get himself in great nick before he joins up with the French squad in Euro 2016, which is obviously a big deal for all French players. I think, as well as the fact that they feel a bit let down and betrayed, there's a sense of the club's current inadequacy, and that's something that really hurts as well. And so I think that has accentuated.
I understand that. The players, the way they behaved, is something I can't quite get my head around. Fans almost, they don't have the right to behave the way they did on Sunday, but they do, I guess, have the right to be a bit more irrational. But some of the tackles on Valbuena were awful. Why were the players so het up?
I wonder if that they've just been reading the papers a little bit too much, Chris. It's just, you're right, it is on the face of it totally inexplicable. Because you look at the sort of form Lyon went to the Velodrome in, not great. You look at the sort of form that Marseille have been in their last couple of home games, you know, absolutely battering Troyes 6-0 and Bastia 4-1 since Mitchell arrived. You think, if they'd have just played it quite calmly, you would have really fancied them to win. But in fact, their complete loss of emotional control handed the initiative to Lyon. And when that just abysmal tackle by Roman Alessandrini, which I would expect him to get a fairly chunky ban for, Cabella, I think, was very lucky to stay on the field for his early two-footer on Christophe Jallet as well. I can understand how you can get sort of caught up in the atmosphere at the Velodrome. It's intoxicating. It's an extraordinary atmosphere for anyone who hasn't been there before. So, but really, what makes the difference between good players and good players who become very good players for Olympique de Marseille is the players who can either use that in a positive fashion or disconnect from that. You know what? I think it just shows the limitations of the current bunch, that these are not players who are going to get them in the Champions League. But, you know, they may have battered a few chumps recently, but I think that's what they're going to be limited to this season. I don't see them finishing any higher than fourth. I expect Lyon and Monaco to pick up.
Lacazette scored a first-half penalty. He missed one in the Champions League in the week, so his goal drought ends. But Reckitt got the equaliser midway through the second half after the restart for that long stoppage in the game because of the problems. Andy, let's move on quickly. Can I just ask you one on Montpellier? Just a quick one, but what is happening there? Because they're in the relegation zone. They were champions not too long ago.
That's right. And Roland Courbis, who came back to get them out of trouble after it went awry a little bit under René Girard, the coach who won them the league, I think he's globally done a good job at his second spell at the club. And they're seventh place last season. Really, the title win's absolutely extraordinary. And time tells us more and more how extraordinary that was. Of course, they had exceptional players like Giroud and like Younes Belhanda But seventh last season was very good. The problem is they've lost the front three, really, from last season. Lucas Barrios moving on after his loan spell from Spartak Moscow expired and he went off to Brazil. Morgan Sanson, who's going to be terrific player for France in the future, a sort of Cabella type. He's seriously injured and won't be back probably before the end of October. He's been out since spring. And Anthony Meunier, of course, who was produced from the Lyon Academy and set up goals as well as scored them, their main creator. They've all gone and all of a sudden they can't score. And that's the big problem really under Courbis. And he's probably the least responsible for what's happening at the moment. But it's highly likely he will end up paying with his job for this tricky little spell. And of course, they conceded that late winner to Jeff Louis at Caen at the weekend, which saw them lose in injury time when, you know, a point would have at least given them something to build on.
Well, if they can't score, someone who can, Andy, is Edison Cavani. Paris Saint-Germain still leading the way, held by Reims, who have been the surprise package, I guess. But if we can talk quickly about Cavani, has he taken over from Ibrahimovic a bit? Because he seems to be the man scoring all the goals.
He has been of late. I still have my reservations over Cavani because I just think he misses too many chances, particularly in the big games. Now, people will turn around and say, well, strikers do miss chances. And of course, that's completely correct. But I just feel that when he has to be the centrepiece in the very biggest games, I'm not convinced that he can do it. Now, comparing him to, say, I think Ibrahimovic is not a great comparison simply because, and everyone's talking in France, of course, about the open goal that Ibra missed against Reims at the weekend. You've got to bear in mind that he is getting on a bit. And more to the point, he's just got such a big frame. He needs to be really, really fit to be at his best. And when he's been carrying little physical problems in the last season or so, it's really held him up. And when he's got fit again, totally fit again, he's been firing, and I feel pretty confident he'll get back to that. The thing I have with Cavani, I'm thinking if I was a Premier League giant with loads of money and I wanted to buy an iconic striker to score my team the goals, to get them to the final stages of the Champions League, to challenge for the Premier League title, something like that, I was watching Napoli versus Lazio this morning and I thought I would buy Higuain ahead of Cavani every single time, because there is not just a player who scores goals, he's a player who creates goals as well, I think, and he's just such a presence, which I never really feel Cavani is. I accept his personal preference to a certain degree, but I just feel for the sort of money you pay for an elite striker, you want someone who can influence every game, who can be important even when he's not scoring goals. And I'm not convinced Cavani's that player personally.
Me and Chris, Andy, have said something very similar on this podcast. We were surprised more big clubs weren't in for Higuain in the summer. Elsewhere in Liga, Monaco were beaten 3-2 at home by Lorient. They're a club clearly rebuilding at the moment, Monaco, after big summer departures. And Rennes missed the chance to go top after a 1-1 draw with Lille on Friday.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Andy, let's look at matters in Spain very quickly, because I know you do have to dash off, but Valencia 0, Real Betis 0. There was booing at the end of the game. I know these Valencia and Sevilla are the kind of clubs you're really into in Spain. What's happening at Valencia and with Nuno Santos at the moment? Because they, of course, lost in the Champions League and things not working in La Liga either.
That's right. I mean, they've scored two goals so far this season. I mean, they've only conceded one, but Nuno has a right to really look upstairs, because he made it quite clear at the end of last season that he wasn't happy with the striking options that he had. Paco Alcacer, a product of the academy, pardon me, is someone who he does want to keep, but Negredo and Rodrigo haven't really done it for him. You know, they haven't quite got the replacement they would have wanted. Of course, a lot of people talked about Radamel Falcao with the Jorge Mendes connection, and they missed a lot of chances against Betis at the weekend. I think them getting found out in the Champions League by Zenit, who are, you know, traditionally right little nervous Norrises in Europe, I think is more of a concern. Going on to Sevilla, I think for them, it's two things. It's a case of finding that balance between Champions League and La Liga. And of course, we saw their game together, didn't we, Rob, against Mönchengladbach last week, and they were absolutely fantastic in that. They could have won by a lot more than that three-goal margin. But the second thing, and I think the thing that's most important for the league, Fernando Llorente, one of their new signings who did score against Celta Vigo, he talked about, you know, he said, we lacked intensity. We lacked intensity and we lacked fight. And you aren't going to win a lot of games if you don't do that. And I think he's right, because at the moment, you know, Sevilla were so intense last season, especially at home. And now they're bedding in quite a lot of new players. Now, Monchi, over the last couple of seasons after a fallow spell, has played a real blinder in the transfer market in the last couple of windows. But now, where their best 11 is still a big question. You know, they don't have that same solidity yet they had last season. They've had a lot of defensive injuries as well, which hasn't really helped them, especially when they've had to move Krychowiak out of midfield to play as an emergency centre-back, as they did in the UEFA Super Cup. And they really miss him in midfield when he's not there. It reminds me a little bit of, if we go back to 2006-2007, and Chelsea had to move Essien to centre-back, where we performed admirably, but they missed him so much in midfield. So I feel that, you know, they've got arguably the best coach in the division in Unai Emery. The club knows what it's doing and where it's going, but it's just a question of those new players needing to bed in.
Andy, so great to have you on. Thanks for coming on, mate, as always.
Real pleasure.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Okay, Chris, let's finish our La Liga roundup ourselves. We'll start with Granada nil, Real Madrid 1. Gareth Bale injured at the moment with that calf problem that he picked up in the Champions League. But Karim Benzema got a second-half winner. Rafa Benitez admitted that it, you know, perhaps wasn't the most attractive performance, but defensively they're looking very good.
Yeah, they're yet to concede. Keylor Navas, as you mentioned, must have thought that David De Gea was coming to replace him all summer. And he's equaled the club record of consecutive clean sheets at the start of the season, which is immense. Four games, they're yet to concede. They've scored 12 times. One blemish on their record, otherwise they would have won all four. That draw away at Sporting Gijón last month. But yeah, Real Madrid's looking good. I questioned at the very beginning of the Football in Europe podcast, the first week, if they'd be able to keep up with Barcelona this season.
Yeah.
They didn't sign a marquee player. They didn't get De Gea in the end. So far, though, they do look like they're going to mount a really good title challenge. So disappointing for Bale. He was looking back to what he was in the first season in Madrid. And it was interesting, in this country, it was all about, oh, Benitez says he's going to be back for Wales. Benitez doesn't care about Wales. He cares about the Madrid derby, which is before the international break. And he wants Bale back for them, which would ultimately be good news for Wales, because he'd be back for their key Euro 2016 qualifiers.
And Bale in that number 10 position, where he has been flourishing, in fairness. Villarreal move up to third. What a season they're having. They beat Athletic Bilbao by 3-1. Eibar nil, Atletico 2. Fernando Torres scoring for the second week running. And Correa getting the other goal. He's looking a very promising player. And Chris, let's finish with Barcelona. So Barcelona won 4-1 against Levante. They had to wait until the second half of their goal, Bartra scoring, a couple of the La Masia players featuring the likes of Sandro as well in this one, with Luis Suarez on the bench. But Lionel Messi and penalties again. It's something we had an argument about before. What happened in this one?
Well, I said take him off penalties.
And I said you can't take him off them.
You sat there smugly when he knocked one away.
I almost texted you.
And then he missed one.
In the same game, yeah. So I don't know what you do. I mean, he then scored a wonder goal on 90 minutes. Just an unbelievable, picked up on the right-hand touchline, cut inside, two or three players. We've seen it a million times. Edge of the box, drilled it into the corner. Hector Bellerin was on Sky Sports covering the game, and he said you can't take Messi off penalties.
But surely you can. I mean, I get that Lionel Messi is a freak, really. Not just in his goal-scoring exploits, but also then the way that you have to manage him, someone who is that good.
The fear is that a big game comes along.
Well, he's missed 6 of 12 penalties.
Yeah, it's not
now,
great.
Now, at some stage, he might miss a really important one in a league game or in a Champions League game, and it might cost. That is 6 of 12 penalties.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Anybody else would be taken off. By the way, Levante, they lost 4-1. Actually, an improvement on their recent trips to
Why is that?
New Camp, because their last three games before that loss was 5-0, 5-1 and 7-0.
I'm sure they'll be winning there next season.
Yeah, well, no, 4 seasons time, they should get a point.
So Barca top, maximum points. Real Madrid, Villarreal, Celta Vigo all on 10 after 4 games. Atletico 5th on 9.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
This week's special interview is with football agent and former Barcelona CMO Esteve Calzada. He was at the club from 2002 to 2007, an era when the club were crowned European champions for a second time under Frank Rijkaard. We get on to matters Blaugrana in the interview, but we spoke because he's compiled a report into what he believes to be the true value of the best players under 21 in Europe. Last week, we heard how he thought Manchester United had substantially overpaid for Anthony Martial. Of course, those comments coming before his 3 goals for Manchester United. But I started by asking him about whether he had concerns, because I certainly do, about the spending power in the Premier League.
Well, I'm not concerned myself personally. I would be concerned if I would be at a club of a smaller league, because this means that the Premier League is like the NBA of European football. So they are pretty much in control. And every time a Premier League team comes and is interested in a player for a smaller league, there's nothing that can be done to retain the player. Only teams that can retain players are the Premier League teams themselves, the likes of Stones, Berahino, etc. Whereas in other leagues, the teams cannot afford the salary increase that they would have to give to the players, and they cannot give up on the transfer fees that they would collect. But on the other side, I think it's good that there's so much money into the game. The Premier League still helps finance the other leagues. So all in all, it's not of a concern aside, but it's actually good news, I would say.
I saw on your website, Stevie, that you represent many young players, and it's something that you've been looking at as well with the value of players under the age of 21. You valued Raheem Sterling as the most expensive player in the world under the age of 21. How did you come up with that top 20 list?
This comes from a very complex formula in which we use lots of different data and statistics and even technical support. When we see what happened in the market, we realize that we fell very short. All the players in the list that were traded at much higher amounts, specifically the case of Martial that we valued at 16 million, and we still think that on paper he's worth 16 million, and he was traded for 50 million plus add-ons. The ones with the highest inflation or the highest value will be the ones that have a British passport. Because of the regulation in here, those players are pretty much most wanted.
And I want to ask you as well about Lucas Silva, who I know your agency, Primetime Sport, represent. He's just gone on loan to Marseille. How excited are you that he's going there and he'll be playing regular first-team football?
We're very excited because he has huge potential, and it was very important for him to play regularly this season, just because the fact that there is the Olympic Games next summer and he's in the team. And we thought Marseille would be a very good destination for him at the end of the season, having in his back 35, 40 games. And that's going to be an amazing experience for him to go back to Real Madrid next summer. We've seen that there's a track record of players that have been in the French league and that got very well valued afterwards. That should be very good for him. Also, the fact that there's a manager who is very keen on having him and very linked to Real Madrid. All in all, we think it should be a great experience for him.
And Esteve, finally, I just wanted to ask you a quick one about your time at Barcelona. You were there for 5 years as chief marketing and commercial officer. What was it like to be around that club at that time when they won the Champions League in 2006 and being involved with some of the greatest players we've seen this century?
Well, it was a great experience also because of being a Barca fan since I was born. So it was sort of a dream job for me. I enjoyed myself a lot. At that time, it was not the level of a club that we are seeing right now. But we managed to do lots of different things, including the UNICEF bill for the shirt and dealing with big players. It was great fun.
This is Football in Europe special interview.
Esteve Calzada, football agent and former Barcelona CMO there. Good to get his thoughts on Lucas Silva's move to Marseille, one of his clients. But Chris, we were talking about the most valuable under 21 players in the world, and Sterling, they valued, he admits that perhaps we undervalued a lot of them, but he was top of the list in that age group for 50 million euros.
Well, it's very interesting to have a non-football based look, not necessarily exactly what they do on the pitch, but lots of other things around it.
The British passport thing. And
yeah, and also, you know, other sports have done it. Is it Moneyball, the film about baseball, when they decided just to pick people purely on stats, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's really interesting. It's fascinating looking at Sterling, though. He made his 100th Premier League appearance at the weekend, which is amazing. I mean, you're buying someone who has all that potential, being only 20,
yeah,
and also a vast amount of experience in order to hit the ground running straight away.
So how does that compare to Martial?
Well, Martial, my stat of the season, most enjoyable one I've found so far, I think, is that before this season, he played 90 minutes of senior football on four occasions. That's
oh,
it.
Oh, wow.
So you can understand he's made an outstanding start and he looks such a player. He's so composed in front of goal, but it has to be a gamble when you pay that much money on someone who, as yet, hasn't really completed even 90 minutes on very many occasions.
As some of the other names in the list, by the way, people might be interested. Marquinhos, valued as the second most expensive under-21 player. Then Depay, Berardi at Sassuolo, Jimenez at Atletico, Calhanoglu at Leverkusen, who's an outstanding player. Kovacic, who's moved to Real Madrid, and they roughly got the value for that, right, actually. He went for €30 million. They valued him at €26 million. Gaia at Valencia, Luke Shaw, Laporte, Origi's in that list, as is Martial, Emre Can, and John Stones as well. It was interesting, Esteve also called the Premier League the NBA of football. Thanks very much to Esteve for his interview. Let's move on to some more of our roundup.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
Chris, I was over in Germany at the weekend to do commentary on Hamburg against Eintracht Frankfurt. We'll get onto that in a minute, and the fact that two teams have 100% records in the Bundesliga at the moment, but two teams have lost all five games. It's unprecedented.
First time it's ever happened in a Bundesliga season. This is the 53rd season of that division. Yet Stuttgart struggling big time. And of course, the other big story, the main story in Germany, certainly Mönchengladbach, lost all five. And the Rhein derby defeat to Cologne, the final straw for Lucien Favre, who resigned.
Why was this so surprising? Because it is a poor start to the season.
It is, but in 4.5 years, he's achieved a lot. He got them into the Champions League this season. They're in Manchester City's group, remember? That City's next game in Germany on match day 2. And very much, it wasn't a case of him being sacked. It was him walking away from the club. He says that no longer feels that he's the right man for the job. And the club came out because they backed him after last weekend's defeat domestically and said, we still think he's the right man for the job. And again, after the defeat of the weekend to Cologne, they came out and said, we remain certain that Lucien was the right man for the job, but he decided to go, and it's a huge blow for Mönchengladbach.
And there is history with Favre with this. He did very well with Hertha Berlin in the 2008-09 season, overachieved. The following season, they started very badly, and by September, he was actually sacked, and they ended up getting relegated. Chris, Bayern, two former Juve midfielders scoring in the 3-0 win at Darmstadt. Darmstadt have this old, very ancient-looking stadium that hasn't changed since the 80s. So it was weird to see Bayern playing in this arena outside of a cup competition. Darmstadt have done very well since their promotion, but as I mentioned, two key goal scorers.
Yeah, Vidal scored, Koeman scored. Maybe the biggest surprise, Thomas Müller didn't score, but because he was on the bench. He's been amazing recently. Had a look at this game because it's a very busy period in the Bundesliga. They have midweek this week, and then a couple of huge games coming up for Bayern, including against Dortmund in Der Klassiker next Sunday, the 4th of October, which is the big game in Germany. And certainly the way things are going, that's shaping up to be a cracker. The Bayern bench, okay? Javi Martinez, Thomas Müller, Xabi Alonso, Thiago Alcantara, and Philipp Lahm.
And that's with all their injuries as well to Robben and Ribery.
And the team that was out managed to win 3-0.
Yeah, very impressive from Bayern again. I watched Dortmund against Leverkusen on Sunday, probably the big fixture in Germany at the weekend. And Dortmund were just excellent. And they deserved their win. They ended up beating Leverkusen by 3-0. The first goal coming on 19 minutes, Jonas Hoffmann somehow getting round Bernd Leno, a disastrous piece of goalkeeping, but Hoffmann playing very well. There was no start for Yanazai, he did come on. Shinji Kagawa made it 2-0 before the hour mark, a former Manchester United player, and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang converted a penalty, no Panenka this time with 16 minutes to go, and Dortmund looking very good at the moment.
Yeah, and he didn't score, but I think Henrik Mkhitaryan is just...
Oh, he's playing out of his skin.
Absolutely irresistible at the moment. And the change in manager seems to have absolutely worked for him. He's one of the form players in Europe at the moment. And I almost look at it now, Dortmund 5 wins out of 5. They can't really do any wrong. And it's such a shame, you know, that they're not in the Champions League, because they're playing at a level now where maybe there would be challenges again in that competition.
Yeah, but maybe they'll fancy themselves for winning the Europa League. Maybe Tuchel will look at that tournament and think, maybe we can win that.
Yeah.
Why not? Challenge for the title? What do you reckon? Is it too early to be going into this stuff?
Probably, but as I mentioned, that game, I think we'll have a much better idea after next Sunday. If Dortmund can get something from that match against Bayern, then absolutely they can challenge for the title. Any side that wins 5 on the bounce has to be taken very seriously.
Elsewhere in the Bundesliga, Mainz beat Hoffenheim by 3-1 despite falling behind. Yunus Mali with a hat-trick. Bastos came off the bench for Wolfsburg in their 2-0 win against Hertha to score twice. He scored in the 76th minute and the 88th with a penalty. A bit of misbalance to the Wolfsburg team, I understand, for that game.
But another win. They're still unbeaten. They've started the campaign well. It's going to be very interesting to see them at Old Trafford. I'm going to that match in the Champions League next week. United lost their first game, of course. Wolfsburg won their first game against Cisca. So already that is a huge game for Louis van Gaal's side, I think. As you said, Nicholas Bentner started, but Bastos, who scored so many last season, got both the goals. Draxler played the full 90. He got up and running in midweek against Cisca in the Champions League. And, you know, they lost Kevin De Bruyne, who, you know, made his City bow in some style against West Ham in that defeat. But, you know, Julian Draxler as a replacement is not bad at all.
Speaking of Julian Draxler, replacements, if you like, at Schalke, they're having to replace him at the moment after he left for Wolfsburg. And they won 1-0 at Stuttgart to the weekend. And Leroy Sané scored the winner 8 minutes into the second half. This was a wonderful goal. Picked it up on the left-hand side of the box. Cut in, he had options in the middle, but he had the confidence to take it on himself and fire it into the corner.
Well, he's a huge, huge talent. Remember last season away in that game
at the
Bernabeu?
Yeah, it's crazy.
When he really came to the fore. We talked about Stuttgart, 5 defeats. But yeah, excellent result for Schalke. And they do have this conveyor belt of talent. They've lost one of their real stars in Julian Draxler. But, you know, a chance for some of their other youngsters to come to the fore.
Augsburg get their first win of the season with a 2-0 success over Hanover. And Ingolstadt have only scored 3 goals all season, but they're on 10 points. Not bad after their win at Werder Bremen. I just want to talk about my game from the weekend, Chris. I had the one goalless draw for my commentary at the weekend. Hamburg 0, Eintracht Frankfurt 0. It was a game really that was of two halves, to use the cliche. Lewis Holtby was the outstanding player for Hamburg in the first half, and they should have gone in front. Johan Giroud had a shot cannon against the crossbar, but then Frankfurt in the second half turned it around. And it's all about Alex Meyer. This is a great story. He's now 32 years of age. He was the top scorer in the Bundesliga last season, surprise top scorer in the Bundesliga last season. He came back from 5 months out with a knee injury to score a hat-trick against Köln the previous weekend in a 6-2 win. He almost got the winner as well at Hamburg. I mean, he's an outstanding player. The Bundesliga table, Chris, how do the top four look at the moment?
Well, it looks very good for Dortmund and Bayern. Dortmund ahead on goal difference. They've got plus 15 goal difference. Five
it's
games.
More than Bayern.
5 games into the season. Remarkable. They're first. Bayern just behind, both 5 wins out of 5. Wolfsburg are third, 4 points behind them with 11 points. And then it's Schalke in that final Champions League place. And we have to look ahead to this week, Rob. Tuesday.
Yeah.
Bayern Wolfsburg.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Okay, Chris, let's round up the rest of the major European leagues. At the weekend, PSV, after beating Manchester United, were beaten 2-1 at Heracles, who are second in the Eredivisie. What a season for them. They came from behind to win that game after an early Luke de Jong goal. But one of the major talking points, Héctor Moreno, the player who broke Luke Shaw's leg, produced another horror challenge just 4 or 5 days on from that game. He caught the knee of Osama Tanane. It's worth looking up. There's vines of it on Twitter and everything. And Tanane, one of their outstanding players, and he had to go off on a stretcher. PSV losing that game without Andres Guardado, but I'm sure that Moreno's going to get a warm welcome at Old Trafford, isn't he, later in the group stage of the Champions League. Elsewhere in the Eredivisie, Ajax picked up a 2-0 win at Excelsior. El Ghazi scoring again, Chris. What a season he's having. 7 goals in 6 games so far, and Ajax are top of the table. And Frank de Boer undoubtedly will be very happy with that. His brother, Ronald, has done a bit of modelling this week, Chris. He's done a bit of modelling, old Ronald de Boer, for his daughter's clothing range. He looks all right, actually. You know, he still looks sharp, but use the hashtag ProudDaddy You winced there, Chris.
Oh, that's so proud. I think it's the fact it's daddy, not dad or anything like that. I can't see that one. Maybe we should tweet it. At Football in Europe show, hashtag proud daddy.
I'm proud of, yeah, but to who?
Just try and get it off. Just try and get it off.
Really make this happen. Chris, okay, you did some games in Russia. You did Zenit, but let's talk about the CSKA Moscow game because this is perhaps the most bonkers game from the weekend.
Oh, I think you'd do better to beat this all season, to be honest. 6-4, CSKA won in Saransk against Mordovia. They were 3-0 down at half-time. They were 4-3 down with 10 minutes to go. And they won 6-4. There were two red cards. And one of the best stories, I think, of the weekend, Leonard Slutsky, who, of course, is the Russia coach now. Great start there. At half-time, now, they've been drawn away to Irkutsk this week in the Russian Cup. Irkutsk is further east than Bangkok.
You love your distances.
Goodness, it's
that is unbelievable.
It's a long, long way. And he says that at half-time, he told the players, if you lose this game, you're all travelling to Irkutsk and playing in that match because he was going to field a reserve team.
That's pretty good.
That's how much he didn't want to go to Irkutsk.
And that's how much they didn't want to go.
But poor old Mario Fernandez, who is one of the best players in the Russian Premier League, he got sent off. And because he's banned in the league, he is going to Irkutsk.
Our poor old Mario. Zenit, Chris, you did them after the win at Valencia in the Champions League. I was expecting them to get back on form in the Russian Premier League, but a 1-1 draw with Amkar Perm.
Yeah, and particularly they took the lead after 10 minutes. They actually started well. Artyom Dzyuba got his first home goal for Zenit. Hulk missed a penalty, not for the first time this season.
Yeah, so like Messi there.
And Amkar Perm came back and got an equaliser and were fully worth it. I've done Zenit's last two home games now. 1-1 draw with Amkar Perm, 3-1 home defeat to Karelia Sovietov. And they've also lost to Krasnodar at home. They've dropped almost as many points at home already as the whole of last season.
Wow.
And they're 8 points behind CSKA and things just aren't quite right. One other really interesting thing about this game. So Andrei Villas-Boas is banned. In that Karelia game, he shoved the linesman, got a 6-match ban. And Sergei Semak was on the bench.
Yeah, he was when I did them the other week. Yeah.
But very much was in charge.
I think before the end of the season, he might be in charge of that team. Is that what you're alluding to, that there might be some sort of change?
Quite possibly. I mean, he's going to get a coaching job somewhere. You know, legend as a player. He's Leonard Slutsky's assistant with the national team, or he's in the coaching staff with the national team. AVB was on his phone. You could see that. But he was calling the shots on the touchline, not just like a normal assistant
coach. That's a little bit different to when I saw them the other week. It was, Semak was the main one, but all the Portuguese coaches, Villas-Boas's guys, were sort of up and about.
Okay.
But if Semak was... That's quite interesting. Maybe Semak is trying to show that he can do the job. Villas-Boas says he's leaving at the end of the season, but I reckon that'll come earlier. Chris, Turkey, let's have some Van Persie and Nani watch.
They both had a good afternoon against Bursaspor. Fener at top of the table. That really poor result at home to Molde in the Europa League where they were beaten.
Rubbish,
Nani scored the opener, assisted by Lazar Markovic. And
there we go.
And Robin van Persie got the win at 10 minutes from time.
So he must be quite happy at the minute, Van Persie.
Well, no, because he was left out of the starting lineup.
And he doesn't like that.
No, and he actually told a Turkish TV station, here we go, to be honest, I'm not very happy. I was not happy that I started on the bench. I'm fully fit, physically very well, and able to play for 90 minutes.
Club Bruges, by the way, 5-1 winners after against Vaslan Bever, and that coming after they were thrashed by Napoli in the Europa League 5-0. But it's still Oostende who are top by 4 points. We're going to have to maybe get Mark Rodden back on the show to try and work out what on earth is happening in Belgium this season. So, Chris, we're thinking of doing... We might have a midweek podcast or one towards the end of the week.
Yeah,
why are we going to do that?
Well,
because no one's paying us, mate. So why are we doing this?
Just because we love it so much. No, just there's a lot of midweek action in the major leagues. Germany and Spain and France, I think. So there's a lot of football to talk about. And it's a big time because the international break is rapidly approaching again. But before that, lots to play for. We mentioned briefly about some of the big games in Germany. There's some big games across Europe, really.
Okay, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. Yeah?
Yeah, just like Barry's.
Just like Barry's and just like Jack's. Thank you very much for downloading the podcast. We hope you're enjoying it. Give us some feedback. Tweet us as well, at FIE Show. I might change the Twitter handle. FIE Show, does that mean anything to anyone in the world?
What would you change it to?
We're essentially having a production meeting at the end of the podcast.
Yes, we are, yeah.
I'm thinking maybe FIE podcast, because football in Europe doesn't fit the number of characters.
Oh, I don't know. Does FIE podcast mean anything? Tweet
yeah,
in.
You know, there's a podcast.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, try
FIE
it.
Show could mean a theatre production.
Yes, it could. Well, let's try it, and we'll see if we get like 10,000 followers next week.
Yeah? I don't think that's very likely. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again later on this week. Unspecified day. We don't know when we can build it. When are we going to record it? Thursday.
TBC.
You've been listening to Football in Europe. Join us every week on Audio Boom for the latest content, interviews and special features. For more, follow @FIE Show on Twitter or head to footballineurope.co.uk.